Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at UH1.com.
Welcome to Hoovering, the podcast about eating. I'm Jessica Fostercue. I love eating as much as anything else in the world, but also it sometimes brings me conflict, shame, and all sorts of other things that are rubbish. It's complicated and I think fascinating. This is a conversation with an interesting soul, not just about food, but about gobbling it up, or if you will, hoovering. Hello, please. We've got a lovely episode this week. I'm hoovering with the Nigella Lawson coined queen of gluten-free baking, Becky Excel. She's an Instagram superstar, and her first book, How to Cook Anything Gluten-Free, smashed loads of records, and the pre-sales of her new book, How to Bake Anything Gluten-Free, has also hit record highs. It's not even out yet. It's not even out till September. It's already broken loads of records, with every idiot going, I love that. Can I make sure I'm having that the second it comes out? It's a very popular lady, Becky is, and I'm very glad I got to talk to her. First things first, I need to remind you to come to Hoovering Live tomorrow, please. It's tomorrow, if you're listening to this, as it comes out. Saturday, 17th of July, 5 p.m, as part of the Underbelly Festival. First Hoovering Live in person for bloody years, for obvious reasons. So I've made it a special one, and my guests are fucking Joe Brand and fucking Jay Rayner. Yeah, so I'll see you there, okay? I also would like to invite you to a half-hour special, stand-up special that I'm recording for Radio 4 called Powerhouse, based on my last show, Hench. I'm recording that on the 28th of July at the Up the Creek Comedy Club in Greenwich. It's totally free. You can just apply to be in the audience. I think because restrictions will have eased a bit, you can have quite a juicy audience. So there is room if you would like to come. It's like a reworked half-hour version of that show. I'd absolutely love to have you there. If you go to SRO Audiences and Current Shows, you can find it on that list. Also, I am taking Hench on tour at the end of July, from the 24th of July through to the 10th of August. A bunch of dates, all of them I've kept socially distanced, and they are all selling out real fast, so hurry up and come to them. Most places, in fact, I'm doing two shows so that we can fit everyone in, even though they're distance. Links to everything I've mentioned there, the Hoovering Live, the half-hour special, and all of Hench's tour dates, as well as any other live stuff I've got going on, as ever, are going to be in the podcast notes. Wherever you got this podcast from, anything that's written in capital letters is a link to whatever it's talking about. Please use those so it makes it worth me spending ages writing them up. Thanks. Thanks for listening also to Hoovering, by the way. It helps other people find out about the podcast if you say, hello, please may I tell you about this podcast called Hoovering? Also, you can tell other people about it by subscribing to it or by giving it a 5-star review. Thank you for doing those things. If you'd like to support the podcast financially, you'd also be bloody welcome. Go to patreon.com/thehooveringpod and you'll see excellent Hoovering related stuff I will give you in exchange for your actual pennies, from as little as £2 a month, stuff like guest recipes and discount tickets to the live shows, like the one I was just on about there with Jay Rayner and Joe Brand, actually. Right, Becky and I hoovered over Zoom because we're in different counties. She's in Essex, I'm in London. But we both ate lunches made from her recipes. And as you'll hear, I was particularly bowled over by mine. Very smug. It was delish. We get quite deep into everything topic-wise, from anorexia and recovery, right through to my, at the time, startlingly recent experience of spilling a freshly poured hot coffee onto my own vagina area. Anyway, that's the way, isn't it, with this podcast? So you're probably used to the juxtaposition of the, I was going to say the ridiculous and the sublime, the serious. The serious and the tuppence searing. Thanks for doing this.
That's all right.
And thank you so much for having for letting me have a copy of this, Guy. How to make anything gluten-free.
Yeah, I've got mine here as well. I'm glad you like it.
I love it. Well, and I've made lunch out of it, and I zhuzhed it up. I've made halloumi and courgette muffins.
Oh, they look nice.
Thanks. Well, you invented them. I made them last night, and I made them last night alongside dinner. And they look so good, I had to breathe two in. So it makes 12, that recipe, but in a house of two adults, 1 5-year-old, they've all gone. So I've had to add.
Yeah, I can imagine.
I've had to add an element to make. Oh,
what
it
have
a
you got on the
lunch.
Side?
I've done fennel. It was tired little fennel bulb in my fridge. I fried a bit of fennel. Yeah. I've added some peas, and I've grated a bit of orange zest in because I'm out of more conventional lemons or limes.
To be fair, that sounds quite fancy. I don't know, is that fancy? I think it sounds almost bougie,
but it could be it could be disgusting. And I've heated these back up a bit. I'm really excited about it.
Wonderful. And I've baked something as well, actually.
Woohoo!
Well, I baked yesterday. I got something very exciting in the post. Ooh. I got my second book in the post.
Copy
of the second book. Like, literally, it's like the only one in existence, I think. I decided to have a look in there.
Yeah.
And I baked some bread.
Oh, lovely.
Because I was like, you know, yeah. So I baked some nice soda bread. It's like cheesy. It's literally covered in, I've literally just put butter on it because it's covered in cheese. Thanks. It's got loads of herbs in it.
Oh.
It's just... Yeah,
ooh,
so
it's like
literally
leveled
came
up
out the oven
straw.
About an hour ago.
Oh, get
yeah,
in!
Pretty much.
Oh, we've got a nice life, haven't we?
We have. It's not
what
bad, is it?
Yeah, I can't wait to get my hands on this. So, second book coming out. And is it like, hasn't it even on pre-sales already? Blimmin' smash loads of records.
It's done a bit stupidly well. Like, I don't ever like saying that because it just doesn't feel right.
You've
but
got a brag. It's awesome.
One.
Woohoo!
I'm not the bragger, but it got to number one in the Amazon book charts as soon as I announced it. So not
get
just
the
food, the whole thing, and it's gluten free, which to me, I never thought.
Yeah,
you know, there would be that many people who would want to buy it because you just don't think about it like that. But
yeah,
it's gone mad. So I'm over the moon.
I'm smug getting to chat to you. I love it. Queen of gluten-free stuff. I've had celiac guests in the past on the podcast. Especially sometimes when I do like live ones of the podcast and there's like a panel of people and I'm getting the food from somewhere, you know, external, like a restaurant or from a bunch of perhaps like independent little local bakeries or whatnot.
Yeah, yeah.
It's actually, I hadn't realised quite how properly fucking terrifying it can be for people who actually, like, you're going to have this incredible, like, if you do eat, it's not like, oh, you know, it's not for them, it's not like an intolerance, it's not a health choice, it's a case of like, no, your body actually has a massively awful detrimental reaction if they have any gluten. So it really opened my eyes, the fact that I was having to go around to these places and go like, no, and them going, oh no, it's not a gluten-free kitchen, and being like, oh crikey, okay, there's to be a whole gluten-free kitchen. This isn't like a faddy choice. Yeah, but how did you end up getting into gluten-free baking?
Basically, I was at university and one day I was eating gluten, I was eating bread, I was eating favourite food in the world, bread.
Mm.
And then suddenly I started feeling really rough. Like, basically, I think it was sort of, you know, you're going out at uni and then afterwards you're eating all the cheesy chips and all the kebabs and all this stuff. And I was just feeling absolutely horrendous, worse than you can think of, worse than like hangover, like just absolutely awful the following day. So I went to the doctors and they were basically like, I think you should give up gluten. So it was literally an overnight kind of thing that I suddenly didn't eat gluten ever again. And that was about 12 years ago.
Oh my God. Okay.
So it's been a long time, and like obviously life has progressed. Foods are better now. There's a lot more choice and everything, but it's still, especially back then, it was really hard to suddenly, you know, I used to eat Domino's pizza with my flat. Mm-hmm. And then I was just not able to eat it, and I'd just be the one sitting on the side, just it isn't just about the food, it's so much about just that social side of it and everything. Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, well, you suddenly can't eat what everyone else can eat, you know?
Yeah, heartbreaking, especially as a student, I think. It must be similar, actually, to a bunch of people I've spoken to, you know, full-on vegans, and they're like, the world has changed so dramatically in the last 5 years with people waking up to the fact that, well, you are really excluding people if you don't have some gluten-free and some vegan stuff on your range, guys in restaurants, running the restaurants. Hope you're listening. But how did you get into like food writing and inventing recipes generally? I don't ever know what the official term is. Is it chef? She's a food inventor, food wizard?
Yeah, I'm definitely not a chef. I'm definitely nothing fancy. Never been taught how to cook. Yeah. It was, except if you cast like my food tech teacher at school. Right. But it was more just like, I started out of real frustration. Right. So it was just, you know, I couldn't eat stuff. Mm. And so it wasn't even like a huge, huge, absolute, I love cooking thing. Yeah. Although I was always quite passionate, and I quite, you know, I like cooking with my mum in the kitchen, but it was more that suddenly I couldn't eat stuff and I was not having that. I just didn't want to miss out on all these foods. So I decided to try and recreate stuff.
Yeah.
That, you know, so I didn't miss out. And then it seemed to just go from there that I started doing that. And then I started writing them up online, and then people started finding them. And then you suddenly realize that there are so many people in exactly that same position. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? So, and they haven't written recipes up and stuff. So they're completely lost. There could be people who've just been like diagnosed and just have no food and feel very depressed. And so I seem to just catch people at the right time. And just, you know, just make it easier for them, which has always been the aim. So yeah, the recipes came to help me, and then they seemed to help everyone else in the process. So it was pretty cool, actually.
It's very cool. And I have to say, like, I've got no idea whether, like, I've cooked gluten-free for a few guests on the podcast. Pancakes that I fucked up, nothing to do with the fact they were gluten-free. And other things have been
love it.
Bought externally. But these sorts of muffins are the sorts of things I would make all the time. Not all the time. A bit more when my son was younger, actually, because it's a really good... They're freezable, aren't they? And they're so easy.
Yeah, exactly.
And they're such a great way of... I love vegetables, but they're a great way of getting vegetables into somebody who doesn't love vegetables, because you can just put a bit of leftover, any almost every veg in there. Yeah, can't you? If you grate it, get it in there.
Yeah.
And it's a great way of using veg up, I think, as well. Like, especially at certain times of year, stuff like courgettes, which are like in these, there's just an abundance, isn't it? But
that was the thing. Like, with me with courgettes, I'm just looking outside... And we've grown, like, my boyfriend's obsessed. Like, he's got this obsession with growing. He doesn't like flowers. He doesn't like plants, but he likes growing vegetables. So we just have this sort of garden that most of the year looks pretty grim, because it's just, like, soil everywhere. And then he just loves to put all these, like, courgette plants. So we've got, I don't know, we've probably got about 6 or 7, and our garden's not very big.
Right.
And in a few weeks, it's going to be, like, the whole fridge is just going to be full of courgettes. So that's where this recipe kind of came from, was... You know, him just going a bit potty with the courgette plants.
I grew my own courgettes once in my back garden, in my old house. And my partner at the time, I was going away to the Edinburgh Festival for all of August. And I went, look, I think they're going pretty strong. Like, can you keep an eye on them? Because I like courgettes, but I'm not that fussed about marrows. Like, can you just keep an eye? And every, like, once a week, I'd be like, and have you checked the garden and watered it and everything? And he'd go, yeah. there's nothing there. And I got back and he said, I'm so sorry to tell you, but there's like three courgettes on the whole two plants. And I was like, oh, right. And I went out the garden. There were three, as yeah. well as a marrow as big as an adult woman's thigh. Just like a log, just led out all along the grass. I was like, I'm not sure how you didn't trip over it, let alone just missed it.
What, so he didn't
pick
it?
He didn't even seen it. It's like he couldn't. It's like he had a blind spot for the mega marrow. Yeah, I could barely pick it up.
yeah, they're not nice either. They're just full of seeds.
It's like a shit, flavourless, watery version of a lovely courgette. Anyway, congrats on your courgette growing. And I'm not just saying this. So I make savoury muffins quite often.
Yeah.
I used to make them really often. I love them. These are, without doubt, the best ones I've ever made. I'm genuinely not just saying that. They're so light and they're so moist. Grim word, but I mean it. And the halloumi.
I love the word moist.
I know, but also they reheat really well. The smell of the halloumi is so, it's really, that salt from it is just lush, isn't it?
It goes together so well, doesn't it?
Yeah. And they're springy and they've level up. They're real level up.
I'm quite jealous now.
Really into them. And what is this? Yeah. Is soda bread, is it quite hard, like a rye bread? I'm not sure if I've had soda bread, not in sort of adult
soda memory. Bread, yeah. So it's not yeasted, so there's no yeast in it.
Okay.
The rye is, obviously it's not a huge amount of rye, but the rye comes from bicarbonate of soda.
So
I think it's like an Irish bread. I think it's really popular in Ireland. Like they love their, I was going to try and do an Irish accent. soda bread. I can't do that at all. I think
it's like Ronan Keating was on the call for a minute there, Becky. It's amazing.
It's just a really simple bread because, you know, I find that sometimes people just want something simple. Mm-hmm. They don't want to have to like prove it for hours. They don't want to, you know, I love, proper bread.
Yeah.
Like, in terms of gluten-free, like I like to prove my bread for ages, but I don't think everyone else does. I think people just want a slice. So this only takes sort of like half an hour to sit there, put it in the oven for about 25 minutes and it's done. So
lush.
It's good.
Can you talk to me about your process? Like when you're inventing recipes for a book, I understand it sounds like where it all started from. It's like you probably started with, right, what's the stuff I miss that you've ended up making? But I suppose more for in terms of like the second book then, what's your process in terms of like, do you do like recipe testing? Do you have a team?
I don't have a team. I wish I had a team, wouldn't I?
I know, we can't all be Ottolenghi, but at least he credits his team. But yes.
No, so for me, where I start is, I start by going to like my followers and everyone who, online, who follows me, and I ask them sneakily without saying, oh, I'm creating a book because I want it to be a surprise later down the line. I'm like, what do you really miss?
Nice.
And I get them to just, you'll get hundreds and hundreds of responses.
It can be a bit overwhelming. I remember before I had my kid, I remember putting once on Facebook, what pram should I get then?
And oh,
was
God.
Like, about 300 responses later from strangers. I was like, oh, God. Yeah. So I'm surprised your second book isn't bigger.
No, it's I was restricted. Honestly, I think it's about 105 recipes. I gave 135 and I was told, no, sorry, you can't have all those in it.
Yeah. So no one's got time for that. You'll never get to do a third book. No, everyone will be in their like 80s going, I'm still finishing book two.
That's what some people have said already with book one. They've been like, you know, I'm not ready for book two yet. I'm still getting through it.
They want to hurry up and eat more, don't they, mate, to be
honest.
Exactly. Yeah. Crack
but yeah,
on.
With the... with the testing and stuff, I get all these things. I actually get my boyfriend to put it. Well, he chooses to put it in a spreadsheet for me. So he literally puts it all in a spreadsheet.
I love the sound of this courgette growing spreadsheet keeping boyfriend.
I know, he's great, isn't he? So he puts it all in a spreadsheet. I see which ones are the most popular.
Yeah.
And then I just sort of go through them, and some of them work, some of them don't. Mm-hmm. Usually, most of the things are generally things that people have missed. So stuff that, you know, with gluten-free people, it's stuff like from takeaways, fast food and stuff like that. So I'll get people saying, I miss KFC. So then I'll make my own version of KFC that they can have because they haven't been able to have it for ages.
Yeah.
But it takes, because it's little old me.
Is that because flour is one of the secret 11 ingredients?
Yeah, it is. Mm. So And I don't know if you know, but the other problem I have is that I can't eat two of the best ingredients in the whole entire world. I, as well as gluten, I can't eat onion and I can't eat garlic. So, I mean, it's just a nightmare. So I made the books entirely onion and garlic free as well, because obviously I need to be able to...
Yeah, you can't not test the stuff.
No, yeah. So that's why I was always a bit worried, because I was like, you know, not everyone who buys the books is going to be onion and garlic free.
No.
But they I think, like you said, with the muffins, you don't realise there's no garlic in them. You don't miss it, do you?
No, I don't miss it. And often with these muffin recipes, if there is garlic involved, it's that powdered garlic, which is so rough and takes over everything. Yeah,
exactly. No,
so I'm relieved there's none of that in there, that I'd have had to have pretended to like that. And I'm genuine about loving it as it is. Also, there's chives. There's chives in this guy. Could you have eaten those?
I love chives. Chives are like the onion alternative, really. Yes. So I have them. We've got so many chives in the garden. I just grow them.
Yeah.
And they taste like onion, but they're not onion. So
they taste like onion, but they're not onion. I had an Austrian nana, and chives make me think of her. She would like, there'd be very finely chopped chives in these amazing, like, stock-based soups when I was growing up. Also, once we had a pot of chives in my, like, we had a tiny yard where I lived with my mum, like, as in a corner of someone else's garden that probably got attached to our house, like this little courtyard, but it was enough to have big pots of herbs in. And I loved chives so much, Becky, that once on my way out to school, I just pinched a few off the top of the chive plant and nibbled them on my way to school. And later was lucky enough to be invited to a game of spin the bottle down the bluey. And
I know where this is going.
now absolutely lovely grown-up man. Obviously, I mean, we are the same age, but a boy called Matthew said, "I'm not kissing her because her breath stinks." And I was mortified.
God. I can imagine.
Yeah. I was like, "How has it happened?" And I remember going to my mum, didn't tell her about the spin the bottle, but did say, "It was so sad, my breath stinks." So she was very sweet and was like, "Okay, I hope you haven't got halitosis." She went out and bought me all these mouthwashes. But what I hadn't put two and two together is you need to stop eating green shards of onion stench on your wet, literally undoing every bit of teeth cleaning that you'd done that morning.
Oh my
unbelievable
God.
Silliness from me.
That's crazy though. Like at that age, I wouldn't touch anything green, let alone something in the garden. I was such, as a kid, I was such a fussy eater. It was ridiculous.
Well, yeah. As a teenager, even?
Probably up until about 14, 15, I wouldn't eat salad. I wouldn't eat any fruit except apple cut up. Like it was ridiculous. I've come so far in the last 15 years, but I was a nightmare. Like I remember, my parents always tell me that I was fine up until I was about 2 years old. And then when I was able to speak, I just went one day, "Mummy, I don't want to eat that anymore." And I just refused to eat stuff. And it just went, and it was awful. Like my brother was like the best child because he'd eat everything. And then there was little old me, like peas and carrots. I'd sniff a sprout and then put it down and be like, "Oh, it's disgusting." I used to sniff everything. It was awful. But now I completely regret it, because now there's lots of food I can't eat and I literally can't have it. And I'm like, why when I was a kid did I not just eat those things? Because now I can't have them. So
I love it.
It's annoying. But
and is your brother still into eating everything?
Oh God, yeah. He is. He's about 6'4".
Okay, fair play.
He's big and he loves his food.
Yay! Oh yeah, how funny! And I can't imagine. I've got a kid who's 5, and he's so far yet to be fussy. Every now and again, he'll be like, "This mains is disgusting," and he'll be sort of quite brutal about it. But luckily, he still puts it away. Or enough of it away to think, well, some nutrients have passed into your system. It's so tricky, isn't it? I had a cousin, I have a cousin who, when she was little, was really fussy, and we were all just sort of watched going, "I can't believe she's getting away with this. She's just having..."
Yeah.
It was, she had, all she would eat for about 3 years were those crisp breads.
Oh, yeah.
Those, like, beige ones with spread, a slice of ham, and about 3 dots of pickle.
And it had to probably be those 3 dots, right?
Exactly. Oh, my gosh.
I mean, I had a cousin.
And now she has everything.
I do have a cousin who, when she was younger, the only thing she'd eat was Dairylea sandwiches. Literally Dairylea sandwiches. That's, she'd come around for like at Christmas and we'd have, she would have Dairylea sandwiches at
Christmas.
I'm not even joking. Like, I shouldn't say this. She'd be so embarrassed. I'll make sure she doesn't listen to this because
she's got to own it. You've got to take responsibility for these behaviours.
I couldn't believe it, but that's what happened.
That's amazing, isn't it? Like, there's always, everybody always knows someone who has ketchup on their Christmas dinner and it's like,
oh,
no!
God, yeah.
I love it.
I'm in my tongue.
I know from our like pre-record chats, but that you do some amazing work for a charity called Beat. I think they're incredible too. They do such amazing work. I've got a live show of this podcast coming up, and half the ticket profits are going to them. I've actually never had any communications direct with them, but I am aware that. I don't want to go into too much detail about their work necessarily because they are rightly very careful. They're an eating disorder charity, aren't they, basically?
Yeah, exactly.
And they help people with disordered eating, but they're very cautious about how you describe their work. But if you're interested in them, essentially, you can please do look them up, and everything is on their website about the sorts of work that they do. But I'd love to talk about your connection to them, if possible.
Yeah, so basically, I have an eating disorder. Yeah. About 7 or 8 years ago, in my early 20s, I had a terrible eating disorder. I had anorexia. Uh-huh. It was at the very beginning of when I started my food writing. So it kind of overlapped. I started doing my blog. Then I got this eating disorder. So I had to give up my blog for a year because it was
I was going to say they're too...
It's not right. Yeah, it doesn't.
Really
they don't go together because I was just... I mean... In a way they should, because I was obsessed with food. I was literally, it was that horrible thing of, you know, I was obsessed with exercise and then I wouldn't eat anything. And then I would binge crazily because I hadn't eaten, you know, like it's this never ending cycle that went on. And it was the hardest time ever. It was ridiculous. And I mean, I would still say that I'm in like recovery now. I don't think it ever really goes away.
No, I hear you. Yeah.
But I didn't really tell anyone about it beside like my family, who obviously knew, and my boyfriend who knew, for years and years. And then about 3 or 4 years ago, I spoke to Beat and was like, I want to sort of tell my story. Yeah. So they said, oh yeah, well, you can write something for the website. So I wrote something for the website, just sort of telling the world about my eating disorder.
Yeah.
Cause I really wanted to do it the right way. I felt like it's far too difficult. Like, it's easy to say things slightly wrong or say something triggering and you know, just give people like even little tips on how to do bad things
eat in a disordered way. I have a similar thing on this podcast. I have a history of disordered eating as well, but also I have learned so much doing this podcast over 3 years now. But I think when I first started, I'd be like, oh, whatever, you know, whoever's listening, they know it's a podcast about eating or whatever. But these days it's like, no, I have to be incredibly careful. There are so many things that can really upset the apple cart so easily for so many people who are having a hard time that actually I kind of always flag it if I'm going to go down that road conversationally and talk about people's, because I always talk about people's history of eating with them.
Of course,
hopefully it's exactly like you're saying, it's so worth going about it the right way, because the whole world is full of unhelpful noise.
Yeah,
the least you can do if you're, you know, on a positive, happy recovery-ish path is at least put the right, make sure you're putting the right noise into the world about it.
Well, exactly. So that's really what I tried to do. And then every year since then, I've just tried to, each year I talk a little bit more about my eating disorder, give sort of, you know, my recovery process 1 year, sort of some of the more signs, what to expect, what to, you know, what for my boyfriend, how he felt. I made him do some sort of content and videos, like, because people never see it from that side of like the parent, the boyfriend, this, how, because it's kind of like they have an eating disorder at the same time, because it's so all encompassing and it kind of just takes over everyone's life who knows you. So they just really helped me to get that story out. And then I've raised a lot of money for them.
Get in.
And stuff. So it's been really good actually, because I appreciate them so much. They're so important, and there's so many people out there who like you say, have disordered eating, but they don't even really know about it, or they struggle with it. And yeah. I just really feel like there's a lot more needs to be done. So helping them is, you know, one of the best ways. Yeah.
I think it's been particularly, we're talking almost immediately, hopefully post pandemic. And it's been a particularly rocky couple of years for so many people. And at one point, I think Beats were quite openly like, please, can you donate to us? We are so inundated in a way that we never have been before by people in crisis. So if you're listening to this now, donate to Beat as well as getting Becky's new book.
Yep.
Okay, great. Thank you. Yes. Yeah. Well, thank you for sharing that. I mean, that stuff with us as well, with me as well. Like, I think it's, I have got so used to talking so flippantly about my sort of never endingly complex, but better than it's ever been, relationship with eating.
Yeah.
But I can all too easily be flippant about it, because actually it takes ages. And also, like you say, the recovery goes on and on, but also you can, there's stuff you won't realise until 6 years on or 7 years on, and then you'll be like, oh, no, I have had this new thought about it, actually.
Oh, God, yeah.
I think, especially if you continue working in food, and it's amazing to, you know, to be working in food, like writing cookbooks and stuff like that. On the one hand, it's like, oh my God, you've clearly come so far to be, you know, at peace with stuff enough to be happy working in that world. And on the other hand, and I'm only saying this, I mean, I could be totally wrong. From my experience, I'd be like, yeah, it's so great. And 90% of doing a podcast once a week about eating keeps me on track. But there is a 10% where you're like, oh, this is risky. You know, it is keeping it in my head all the time. So, yeah, how do you find that? I find I have to keep a real eye on it, and every now and again go, I'm going to take a couple of weeks off from the eating podcast, or the reading all the people's books about eating, or the, you know, because actually, I don't know. I find I have to, every now and again, I have to arm's length it and kind of block book guests so that I can put it all to one side for a month here and there and not make sure I'm not obsessing about things again.
Basically. Yeah, no, I'm exactly the same. Like, even though, like, I'm testing recipes and stuff all the time, and you think it would be fun, sometimes I really struggle with it, and I'm just like, you know, especially with my sort of relationship where I was essentially starving myself and then binging and stuff like that, you know, if I have a load of food in the house and it all looks great, I can so easily just go a bit mad still sometimes, and I definitely have to hold myself back. And I think you know, stuff like this happens really badly when you're stressed. So when I'm creating a book and I'm megally, like, my deadlines are coming and things are going wrong, and it's just sitting there and I'm just like, oh my God, what is going on? Like, that's the point where it's most dangerous for me, and I sort of go back into those bad habits. So it's kind of like a love hate it's more of a love relationship with it all, but there's definitely this sort of, like you say, 5% where I kind of still not hate it, but I really struggle with it. And
I've got to keep an eye on this.
Yeah. I think that's learn. You have to talk to yourself. You have to be like, for God's sake, sort your life out, you know? But I think one of the things I wouldn't, however much I hated having an eating disorder, in a way, I don't regret it, and I wouldn't change it, because it's taught me a lot about food. Mm. And I feel like I'm in this much better space with food now that I feel like some people kind of just got almost bad but didn't get quite bad, and they're stuck there in this cycle. Mm. Whereas for me, I saw what it was, and I got to rock bottom, and therefore I know how bad it can be. So now I'm so much better and so much more, I don't know, just understanding with food.
Yeah.
So, but obviously still struggle a little bit.
It's amazing. It's so amazing. It's there are so many things where actually you have to get to the roots of the horror of it, and then it's like, and never going there again. Thank you very much. Thank you. Delicious.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like, a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times.
Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
I'm going to ask you some more sort of silly things now.
Okay.
If that's sounds okay. Good. Has there ever... What's the best tasting but worst looking food you've ever had?
Ooh, best tasting but worst looking. That's hard.
Yeah, I suppose as well. When you're in, like, the business of designing recipes and stuff, it all has to look a bit nice. It's probably been ages since you had just some, like...
To be honest, I am the sort of person who, although the food in the pictures in the book looks great, the food that I serve up on our plates every night does not look, it looks like slop, you know, it looks properly like, especially in the winter and stuff when we're having like stuff from the slow cooker and it's just like, you just pour a whole load of stew on your plate and you got this mash and you don't really care how it looks. You don't present it nicely.
No.
So probably I would say that's just the answer to that is most of my meals that I'm cooking up for dinner.
Good for you. Good honesty. Also, I think mash is a great example. Mash is so hard to make look fit. And like who actually at home on a Wednesday is piping that shit into the...
Oh, God, never.
No one. None. Not you or me.
No, exactly. My stuff does. It does look a bit... It just sort of... It's like a lasagna, for instance. Yeah. I find something like a lasagna. I love a lasagna. Mm. I can never make it look nice. It just looks like... So I get it out and I never understand how you can get all these nice layers and look all perfect. When I put it out, it sort of all just collapses and slides all over the plate. And it's just like... I don't really care because it tastes good, so whatever.
Couldn't agree more.
Yeah.
Do you live in Essex, is it?
I do. I live in Colchester in Essex,
And what's the eating scene like there? I don't feel like I know anything about it. Is there, like, good places to go and eat in Colchester?
Ooh, no. No, it's... I think the problem is that we're not that far from London.
Yeah.
So on the train to Liverpool Street is about 40, 45 minutes.
Yeah.
So because of that, I feel like everything's there.
Yeah.
And out here, we're basically told, get on the train to eat good food. Otherwise, just eat stuff at home. It's we've got all the chain restaurants.
That probably helped you get so good at cooking.
Yeah, to be fair, I think it did. So we've just got, you know, we've got our Pizza Express and our Frankie and Benny's, but that's not really where I want to eat, especially after lockdown. Okay. I don't want to go and eat that sort of food. I want to go and eat something really special and really nice.
Yeah.
And we haven't really been up to London much since lockdown, only a couple of times. So I feel like I'm eager and I'm desperate just to get on the train and go and explore. So Colchester's not great, to be fair.
It's funny, isn't it? Sometimes there are places that I ask because I just don't know. I've got family in Braintree, and I know there's not a lot going on there.
Yeah.
But cultures are like
Braintree's
cooler, bigger sister, isn't it? Really. So I thought maybe it would be somewhere. Yeah. Who knows? That's the vibes it's giving. Yeah, it's better than Braintree.
Really? I don't know. Maybe it's because I've lived here my whole life. I'm like,
fair play.
It's okay. I shouldn't say that. If someone listens who lives there, they'll come and knock on my door.
Do you mind? You've got a really nice there's a really nice theatre in Colchester. It's like a circular
the Mercury
one. Yeah, that's nice. I've had nice gigs in there.
That's really nice there.
Maybe they do an half decent sandwich, but I have to admit, last time I was there we did get Pizza Express, so we can't knock it.
Nothing wrong with that.
It does the job, doesn't it? Apart from them weird ones they do with raisins on. They don't warn you. They've got a weird raisins pizza. Avoid that. I know.
Don't like raisins and anything, let alone
me
on a
neither.
Pizza.
Exactly. Get lost, raisins pizza. five-second rule, yes or no?
Depends where I am, I guess. And it's what the food is as well. Like, yeah. If the food is, I don't know, something... If I had a big bowl of profiteroles and there was loads still in the bowl, if I dropped one on the floor, I'd be like, okay, I probably won't have that. But if it was the very last profiterole, then I'd pick up and eat it and I'd just be like, whatever. But I do have a dog, so there is a lot of, I think since we've had a dog, the dirt from the dog is... kind of makes me think twice.
Also, presumably... give it 5 seconds and the dog's probably already had it. Say scrumdiddlyumptious.
No!
And then you can be in my podcast.
Scrumdiddlyumptious.
Hangover, what's your go-to thing to eat to help with that?
Either nothing, which sounds awful, but it's just like sometimes I just can't face a thing and I just want to lie down and sleep. Or anything potato-based, I think. Potatoes, just like chips, crisps. Potato smileys, something like that. That does me.
I do believe whoever invented the hash brown probably was caring for someone with regular hangovers. That feels like it was invented specifically for the
hangover. I love a hash brown. Mm. Yeah. It is one of the best things.
I would say America is the best hash browns I've ever had. Like, they're just better. Their hash browns are better.
Really?
Or McDonald's. Oh,
no, McDonald's hash browns are amazing. They're also gluten-free, so they're just...
Are they?
Yeah, they're gluten-free. It's the dream, honestly.
Ding dong. I didn't realise that baking powder wasn't all gluten-free. Why have they got fucking gluten in the baking powder, some of these guys?
I know. I think, basically, if you
I've
ever
got
see,
that
like...
Dr. Otterker, whatever it's called, one to
yeah,
make that, these,
that's
and
fine.
That's fine.
Yeah, no, it's stupid, but... basically, if you see wheat flour or gluten or whatever in a product, it's generally because they're trying to make it cheaper and it's just like bulking it out. Like, there's no point to it.
I see.
And they're just like, you know, baking powder costs more, wheat flour doesn't. Let's just mix them together and make some sort of mess. And it's just a waste.
Bloody hell.
I know.
Have you ever eaten anything while it was still alive?
Oh, God.
Random question.
I guess I've probably eaten a fly or two, or maybe a spider.
Yeah, lovely.
But I don't know, like stuff like oysters and stuff, are they alive when you eat them? Or are they not?
I think they might be, actually. I never know with stuff like that. That's a great answer. Do you like oysters?
I blooming hate oysters, actually. I'm a big oyster hater.
Essex has got like amazing oysters, hasn't it, as well?
Yeah,
Mersey. That's a shame.
Yeah, it's really, really annoying. But I had one when I was in Spain once, and my God, it was just like salty water. Like I don't get it, because you just swallow it, like you don't enjoy it. But I don't know. What do you think? Voice
three chomps, three bites, aren't you, and then swallow it. I like them, but I feel like really aware that it's perverse.
Yeah.
To like them. There's nothing objectively to like.
No.
It's essentially like this. It's so intense, and I can fully understand why most people would hate it. I love salt. Like, I'm an absolute bastard for salt. Like a big old salt tooth. So that's why I like them, basically. And I like seafood, and I like salt. And I love chili, and I love them with a bit of Tabasco and like real sharp vinegar. And so just those sort of salt, basically like the most intense salt and vinegar with a tiny bit of heat kick you could possibly have. Also, I think they represent for me like having a very snazzy time. They're like a treat. Like, they're posh as fuck. And I know it's weird, because I know that in some parts of the world, and even in some parts of the UK, like, they are a staple part of people's diet and stuff. So, but for me, they're bougie AF, and they represent a very treaty time. Yeah.
That's the thing, I wanted to like them. It was one of those things where I'm like, oh, I'd just love to be able to just sit at an oyster bar, have some oysters, have some champagne, enjoy life. And it's like, oh, God, no.
It's
so, no,
go
big no
for
me.
You. I'm sorry. Fair play. No. Good honesty. Thank you very much. Have you ever used food for anything other than eating, for example, as a weapon or a prank?
I I have. It seems awful. I've definitely, as a kid, had a fight with my brother and nice. Thrown butter at him. I remember nice. Throwing butter at my brother. So I don't know if he'd want to admit that he threw stuff back at me, or I should be admitting that. But we were about 8 years old, so I think at that age you can throw a butter. Bit of butter.
Do you say butter or batter?
Butter.
Butter. Just a pat yeah. of butter. Still quite hard from the fridge, so that it worked quite well as a sort of brick?
No, it was a bit more soft. It was a bit soft. So in a way, it was kind of worse. Like, it didn't hurt, but it just made a mess. So
All stuck all on you. Just this morning, actually, I accidentally poured a hot cup of coffee directly into my own crotch. That was bad.
Oh, my God. How did you manage that?
I just mishandled the mug. And I was in my gym gear and I had a white T-shirt on. Of course I did.
Oh, God.
So that got all coffee ruined. up the undertum. And then I had shorts on that were quite like, you know, like gym material. So they dry out. So I was like, right, get them off.
Yeah.
My partner wasn't awake yet. So it meant I had to sit for a bit. I had to get my pants off because they were soaked in coffee. I'm not sure why I'm telling you all this. And then, so I had to sit in my T-shirt and trainers, but no pants or shorts. For 45 minutes waiting for them to dry. And then, because I didn't want to wake her up. And then in the end, I was like, right, we had about 10 minutes to go for the gym. So I woke her up and I went and I changed my T-shirt and my pants. But I thought it'd be fine to put the shorts back on. But it meant I spent the whole gym class stinking of coffee. Like, it stank of not dry coffee on my undercarriage. Imagine. Yeah. Amazing. But there we go. I mean, it's probably not the most unclassy thing I've ever stunk of, especially in a gym. So I'll take it.
Yeah, I was going to say coffee isn't the worst, is it?
No, it's a nice, at least it's a nice smell. You just don't expect it to be emanating off a woman's body, do you, in a gym at 10 a.m.
But not down there either, so.
No, not down there. What was I thinking? It's luckily I live in a bit of southeast London called Catford where no one judges anyone for anything because it's an absolute freak show. I just fitted right in. This is a bit of a random question, and if you don't have an answer, don't worry, I'll reframe it. But, like, what do you think the most futuristic thing you've ever eaten is? Or do you have any particularly, like, do you have any opinions or hopes or worries about where eating will go generally in the future?
I guess worries, I would say I'm still a bit concerned about the whole calorie thing recently. Yeah. So I'm restaurants keep wanting to put calories on their menus, or the government want restaurants to have calories on their menus.
Yeah.
And that's a way that I'm quite worried that it will go. I would really hate for them to do that, because I think that's so damaging, not just to people who are struggling now, but just everyone. Do you know what I mean? Like, I think no one needs to know how bad their food is for them. Do you know what I mean? Yeah.
Well, that's how it's going to be couched, isn't it? That's the problem. I couldn't agree more passionately about that calorie business. I feel scared about it, just on a personal level. I just think that's the last thing I need. And it's the last thing an enormous number of people I've spoken to and know need. But just on a broader level, I feel angry that so little education has gone into that decision by the government. Because I don't know who they could have possibly have spoken to that could possibly have advised that, because there's no evidence that the calorie counting works as a diet, and there's a mass of evidence, like an absolute sea of it, that it has a detrimental impact on people's mental health and makes them a little bit obsessed with calories and with food in a way that's not making anybody healthier. Yeah. And even if their objective is just to simply go, no, we just want everyone to be thinner, which is fucking grim in itself. It doesn't take into account anything to do with actual health. It's so basic. Even then, it just doesn't work. So it blows my mind that it's being pushed through with such passion. It really blows my mind. As many of us, I think, you can keep piping up about that. Because it's so misguided. It's just so misguided. It's not going to work. It's not going to be good for the catering industry.
Yeah.
It's going to ruin your meal out, isn't it? Even if you... how could it possibly not ruin so many people's...
Yeah, even people who don't have a problem...
Yeah. It's the death of fun.
Yeah, no, it's I feel like people who... Yeah, exactly. You go out for a meal and you don't want to know that sort of thing. You want to just sit there, enjoy. If you choose whatever you want on the menu that you can eat. the last thing you want is for, you know, the person across the table to go, oh, did you know your meal's this amount of calories or this? Yeah. Oh, you're having a big meal today, are you? You know, you don't want people to be talking like that. And you know it's going to happen. You go out with grandma and granddad, yeah, they're going to start, yeah, saying some weird old things and just being very blunt about it. And it's just going to be a nightmare. You know what I, yeah, mean?
100%. 100%. Yeah. Well, I share that worry with you. And fingers crossed, good, we can keep campaigning our tits off to have that not happen.
Yes.
I would find it, hopefully it'd be my point of view, if anybody's listening who runs a restaurant is, or indeed if you're writing cookbooks and they're going to ask you to put that information there, I think ultimately, how can they possibly enforce it? If everybody refuses to do it, they can get fucked.
Exactly. Yeah.
A weird looking sort of new star floats up and bursts. It's a starburst, and it covers the planet in molten strawberry flavoured sugar lava. At first, everyone's excited because it smells delicious, but then they realise that we're all going to get melted into a really painful death. Okay, luckily though, it's agreed to go back to never having existed, but only if you, and weirdly it does have to be you, Becky, make a continuous snow angel. You have to go somewhere cold with snow, until you've accidentally angel armed and legs burrowed your way down to the core of the earth, all whilst singing, at the time of recording, football might be coming home again and again and again for the whole time. The whole time you're angeling, that's what you're singing. It sounds impossible, but you do it. You're a hero.
Yay.
Yay. Your award, in reality, is the adulation of all people for all time. You're like an international treasure. You are everybody. Can't get enough of you. Your reward in the moment, and bear in mind you're starving because that snow angel was really hard and took ages and you didn't have time for any snacks, is the feast of your dreams. It's the opposite of a last meal in the sense that you're the happiest you could possibly be and you're the hungriest you could possibly be. And this is a fantasy. So I don't give a shit. Nothing you answer has to be possible, let alone I couldn't care less about the sort of environmental impact, anything. None of that. Health get fucked. None of that. I just want to know, in a fantasy, if you were so happy and so hungry, what would you eat? What would you drink? And if there is a who, with, and where, you're so welcome to have a who, with, and where.
Okay. Right. I'll start with drinks.
Lovely.
Cocktails. Endless cocktails. I'm a big Long Island iced tea fan. Love a Long Island iced tea. It's the best of all the cocktails.
Delicious.
But yeah, I'd probably have a whole fish bowl worth of that.
Yes.
Why not? Then I guess starters wise, I think the best starter I've ever had was in Rome. I had these like fried mini pizzas that were just, they were like pizza dough fried and then topped with loads of like sort of spicy tomato sauce.
Ooh,
I don't know what they're called, but I'd have them. Anything fried like that. But yeah. And then main, I think I'd have to go for something where you could have a proper like banquet. So I couldn't just have one plate of food. I'd probably go for, it's either Indian or Chinese. I'd probably, or maybe
I'd
just
get a bit of both. It's a fantasy. Have a little bit of both. Have your favourite bits of both.
Like, what are they? The big buffets, the world food buffets. I'll pretty much have a world food buffet in front of me. So I'll have like all the spring rolls and onion bhajis and all the things that I can't eat. Yeah. I would just have in front of me and eat every last bite and not care. So I'd have that. And then dessert, I'd probably just go really boring and have something like apple crumble and custard, because that's just the best thing in the world. I freaking love an apple crumble. And it has to be like proper, proper thick custard, like the one that you get in the supermarket that's like in the fresh custard section, like extra special custard. I'd have that. Like clotted cream custard.
So are you having that custard cold with the hot crumble? Or are you eating it up?
I love cold custard. I'd have it cold. Yeah.
Yes,
you have the hot crumble and the cold.
Yes,
the hot and cold together is just the best balance in the whole entire world.
I believe you've said the right answer.
Oh, thank you.
Everyone always says hot custard. I think you're wrong.
It's just not the same. You know, I want it all gloopy and cold.
Thank you.
And then in terms of where, I think I would love to be somewhere like where I can people watch, so I could just sit there, maybe, but people can't see me, because this is fantasy, right? So I could just sit in the middle of Times Square on a little chair and a table and watch everyone around me, but they can't see me scoff in my face. I think that would be quite nice.
Nice. Yeah. Oh, lovely. I like that. You've got quite Black Mirror on them, on the who, with, proper. And where, and I really like that. Lovely. No one's ever said that before.
Have I not?
I can see them, but they can't see me. That's glorious. I love it.
I don't want the custard around my mouth, like being cheap.
I know. Yeah, and, you know and, what I mean? And if I was joining you, it'd probably be all in my gusset along with the coffee.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
thank you so much for doing
That's
this.
Right.
It's been lovely.
Well, thank you for having me.
Pleasure. And thank you for the book. And I can't wait to read the next one.
Awesome.
What an absolutely banging guest. Yes, please. Thank you for talking to me, Becky. You should follow her, please. Get on Instagram, Becky Excel, EXCELL. And you can use her name to search for her books. She has a website with blogs and recipes on and links to quickly pre-ordering her book. It's glutenfreecupoftea.co.uk. How to Bake Anything Gluten-Free comes out in September, but you can obviously pre-order it now, every other sausage is. Her first book, How to Make Anything Gluten-Free, that my muffins came from, so I could genuinely vouch, is utterly brilliant, is also available to buy from all the normal places where you'd buy a book. My cousin's boyfriend, incidentally, has just been diagnosed with a serious gluten intolerance, and I'm wanging them a copy as I speak. Not literally as I speak, but in a minute. If you've got spare cash, get it over to one of the best charities for people with eating disorders I've ever known of, Beat. Equally, Beat, this amazing charity, are going to be the recipient of half the proceeds from my next big live show, which is actually tomorrow. Come! It's not too late. 5 o'clock, Soho, Underbelly Festival, Hoovering Live. Loads of the wedge from it, from your tickets, is going to go over to that charity, Beat, and the guests are Joe Brand and Jay Rayner, and you could be in the audience. The resulting podcast I am purposefully not putting out for ages, because so it makes it extra special and exclusive for the people who are actually there. Come and see Hench if you like. It is going on tour from the end of July through to the 10th of August. Also, you can come and see a half-hour special version of it for Radio 4 Get Recorded in Greenwich and South London on the 28th of July for free. Links to all the things I just spoke about, including to everything of interest that we mentioned throughout the podcast, as ever, are in the podcast notes wherever you got this podcast from. Feel free to support the podcast with lovely 5-star reviews, with recommendations out loud, or with actual money on Patreon. Follow us on the Instagram and on Twitter. It's at the Hoovering Pod. I'm on there too, at Jessica Fostercue. You can email me if you've got anything longer than a tweet to send me through my website, jessicafostercue.com. Huge thanks to Acast for hosting the podcast. Hoovering is produced by Emma Corsham, and the music is by Mike Greenway. Until next week, happy hoovering.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.